We are Rogue Media Sports.
Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the greatest, but let me play devil's advocate here. Let's see. So, no, that's a good thing. that's definitely not a problem. Reese's, you did it. You stumped this charming devil.
Start clean with Clorox, because Clorox delivers a powerful clean every time. Because messes happen. Because... I need the charcoal mask. Great, because why would I put that on my face when I could drop it in my sink? This is what I get for multitasking. Ugh, why is charcoal so sticky?
Hello?
Hey, Janice. I am so sorry. I thought I was on mute. No, we don't need to reschedule. I'll just stay off camera. Ooh, yeah, that happens. So start clean with Clorox. Use Clorox products as directed.
It is the Doomsday Podcast, an emergency session. We just met. We just said goodbye to the season so recently, as we tend to do regular seasons for the Cowboys. But we're back because the Cowboys have already made a hire. The defensive coordinator, Dan Quinn, has been hired to replace Mike Nolan, who was fired, as predicted long ago, on the Doomsday Podcast. It's Matt Mosley with Ed Werder, alongside Frito Nation Productions, Chris Gross producing. And Ed, I got to say, you know, my first thoughts on some of those interviews that were happening via Zoom were kind of like, these are kind of McCarthy guys that had some affiliation to him in Green Bay, not really doing much for me. And then the hammer goes down, and Dan Quinn, former Falcons head coach and former Seattle defensive coordinator, the choice is made. And Ed, we'll talk a lot about it. You have some things. You've already talked to Richard Sherman about this, who played for him in that Legion of Boom. We'll talk all about that. But Ed, what was kind of your first reaction? Was it like a nice hire, or what was the word or reaction there at Werder Manor?
Well, first of all, I would reiterate my position on the final Doomsday Podcast, which was that in many ways, blaming Mike Nolan solely for what happened and the failure of the defense at a historic level was unfair to him. And I stand by that. Now we can explain that further later. But as to Dan Quinn, I mean, I think it's a totally sensible, if not fantastic, hire, although it does mean that they're moving back in the direction they only just departed from because they decided it wasn't working to their satisfaction. But the fact that Chris Richard, another disciple of Pete Carroll and the Seahawks defensive philosophy, was effectively the Cowboys defensive coordinator before Mike Nolan should make for a relatively simple transition for Cowboys players, both in terms of, you know, the terminology and scheme familiarity. And I think that's important, not knowing the limitations the pandemic might create this offseason, something the Cowboys underestimated going into the 2020 season. And Jerry Jones cited that and took some responsibility for that, although obviously the general manager didn't get fired over that decision. It was left to poor Mike Nolan to pack up his office and head elsewhere into the NFL. But I think that it's an understandable hire. I think it's a return to the system that they were playing 2 years ago. I think it means they're going to play in more of a 4-3. But to me, the big question now is how can the Cowboys properly invest in their defense when the cost of quarterback Dak Prescott might reach historic level against an NFL salary cap expected to be reduced for the first time? Because it's pretty clear that as good as I know Dan Quinn was in Seattle with those Legion of Boom defenses, you know, they did win the NFL defensive scoring title 4 years in a row under three different coordinators. So that alone suggests that they had a great group of players in Seattle. They don't have that in Dallas, and they're going to have to make improvements in personnel if they want Dan Quinn to replicate the success he enjoyed with the Seahawks.
Well, and part of the failings in the end with the Falcons seem to be not spending, you know, kind of a similar issue to what the Cowboys have, not spending that much money on that side of the ball. And obviously when they went to the Super Bowl, a lot of the money was being spent on the offensive side of the ball, and they were taking arguably the best wide receiver in the game, and then they went ahead and took another wide receiver from that same university. And oh, by the way, Dan Quinn spent a little time as part of the Saban coaching tree all the way back to those Miami Dolphins days. So that's never a bad thing in light of last night. Chris Gross in the Frito Nation production studios. Sir, please play the music. And it is that Doomsday Podcast, and it is a emergency podcast, and we don't like to let big news. I mean, I hated to break in to your lives the moment the Mike Nolan situation went down, because we kind of all knew that was coming, and we had talked about it. And Ed, I do want you later in the program to share your thoughts on why you thought it's unfair, not the firing of Mike Nolan, but to sort of put all the failures and everything on Mike Nolan. I think that would be something good to get to at some point. I do want to start, though, with something I'm kind of excited about. Well, one of your favorite players. But you've been talking to folks. I know you've got a lot of information on Dan Quinn. Let's start right, though. I believe, Ed, you were able to catch up, and you've been in contact with a former member of the Legion of Boom. Dan Quinn oversaw that defense as defense coordinator for a couple of seasons. I believe that was 13 and 14. Ed, what have you been able to learn, as one of those Sports Center hosts would ask you?
Yeah, I've had the good fortune, as luck would have it, with Dan Quinn becoming the defensive coordinator of the Cowboys, that I covered those Seattle teams for ESPN really throughout their entire playoff runs, not just at the Super Bowl. And then I also was responsible and assigned coverage of Dan Quinn's Falcons when they were at the Super Bowl against Tom Brady. So he has been the defensive coordinator, head coach in three Super Bowls, either as a head coach or defensive coordinator. And they were against Peyton Manning once and Tom Brady twice. So he's seen the best there is in the biggest of all games. And you're right. I think of more value than any observations that I can make about Dan Quinn based on that. And I'm going to share some. I also have some insights from Thomas Dimitroff, who was the Falcons general manager when Dan Quinn was the head coach up until very recently of the Falcons. And I did also reach out to Gus Bradley, but I started with Richard Sherman. And Richard Sherman, as we know, is a fantastic all-pro, potential Hall of Fame cornerback with the Legion of Boom defense. And he told me that, you know, along with Gus Bradley, these two guys are some of the best he's ever known in terms of relating to their players and meeting them where they are, he said, connecting with them individually and as a group. He said he will build schemes from the front to the back, so the defensive line will be the focal point. He said he's a great motivator. Players will play for him. He said he will find players that fit that scheme. And then one of the players who stood out to me in that regard is Trayvon Diggs, the rookie who started almost the entire season at cornerback, second-round pick from Alabama. Had as good a year, I think, as anybody on the defensive side of the ball did. And he saw him as a prototype Seattle corner with, you know, length, capable of playing a physical style of football. He said he'll get more out of Diggs than they have been getting. They've been putting him in no-win situations. He said DQ, Dan Quinn, will play to his strengths like Alabama did. And then I think another interesting reference Richard Sherman made was to a former teammate and current friend of his, and that's Earl Thomas. Obviously, the Cowboys have always been linked to and fascinated by Earl Thomas. And Gus Bradley and Dan Quinn have a history. Gus Bradley just got the job today with the Raiders as defensive coordinator, so he could also be in this mix. But Richard Sherman told me that he's almost positive that there'll be a conversation between Dan Quinn and Earl Thomas. And he said if anyone can bring him back to the NFL, it's either Chris Richard, Dan Quinn, or maybe even Gus Bradley. And we all know that the Cowboys need help at safety, that they have always undervalued that position, maybe more than any other team in football. While the safety's of huge importance in the Seattle defensive scheme. I mean, you look no further than the fact the trade they just made this year for Jamal Adams and the effect he had on their football team. Now, he's a unique player, but he had 9.5 sacks despite missing 4 games as a safety. And then in Atlanta, he had a great safety there too. And so it'll be interesting to see what they do. Keanu Neal is the safety in Atlanta that was that the Falcons got with a first round pick. So I think it'll be interesting to see whether Earl Thomas becomes a viable possibility or at least a point of discussion with the Cowboys. But I think obviously Richard Sherman suggesting that this is a very smart hire that makes a lot of common sense for the Cowboys.
Ed, that is fascinating information. And obviously you talk to someone who thinks very highly. I think a man they call DQ will do very well in Texas, a place where the Dairy Queen, the DQ, we all make plenty of stops there. Used to love the Dilly Bar. But I find that this Earl Thomas thing is fascinating and amusing to me. And I feel like 5 years from now, Earl will be about 40 years old or whatever, and we'll still be having this conversation. Could they bring in Earl Thomas? You know, I would just say about Earl Thomas, and I've seen things written about him today, you know, Dan Quinn could have brought him into Atlanta if he had wanted to. He was the head coach there, obviously. You said he had a good safety in Keanu Neal, so maybe that had something. You know, Gus Bradley's been in the league. He's now back to being a defense coordinator. So, I mean, again, something has happened with that guy that it kept him out of the league. Now, did he have something to do with that, on his own? Did he not want to play? I don't know. But that will be interesting. I don't know.
Well, and let's make this point. We have Gus Bradley, who has a history with Earl Thomas, and we have Dan Quinn, who has a history with Earl Thomas, both now new defensive coordinators with new teams. And, oh, by the way, which teams have been more forgiving about, you know, superstar-level players with off-the-field issues than the Raiders and the Cowboys, the two teams these guys are with?
You're right. These are not organizations that their slogan is character counts.
Well,
all right. we'll get back to that.
Both have recently employed David Irving, so I think that we need to say no more about proving my point in that regard.
I like that lawyer. What's that lawyer that's always is still running those things? Lawyer with David Irving. It's like he's still in that Cowboys uniform. We have not seen David Irving in a Cowboys uniform in like 2.5 seasons. And yet that lawyer's still somehow involved with him. I think David Irving.
One final point for me, at least on the Dan Quinn, Earl Thomas thing is when I asked him about Earl Thomas at the Super Bowl in 2015, and that was 5 years ago, Earl Thomas was an elite player at that time. And obviously, he's not that now, or he'd be back in the league one way or another. He wouldn't have been exiled by the Baltimore Ravens. But, Quinn had an enormously high opinion of Thomas at the time. He said, he's such a competitor. If 10 is the high, he's an 11. He comes to walk through with a mouthpiece in. He wants to feel like it's game day. Those are like the little things that probably nobody knows about. His intensity level doesn't change. But, you know, beyond that, I think Dan Quinn has always felt like, and this is what you've heard people talk about with the Seattle defense is, you know, one of the great parts about it is it's not that complex. They have multiple calls for every scenario, but they really stay very true to their style. They don't have a lot of variations. And so I think it's a little harder to get them out of rhythm in terms of what they're trying to play defensively. Offenses can't really disrupt them as much as they can some of the other schemes we've seen. And obviously the difficulty in the system that Mike Nolan brought to Dallas at just the wrong time, as pandemic would merit, proved to be disastrous. So having something more simple and something that the players in Dallas at the Star are more familiar with, I think is a great safeguard and a great place for them to start this offseason.
I thought you'd find this amusing. I noticed some of our local writers in Dallas were almost apologetically, you know, they were describing the cover three that he prefers. And you know, it's, as you said, somewhat simple. They'll go that the high safety look. They'll go with the cover three. You know, they might go with the cover one. And then almost apologetically, Ed, I noticed someone mentioned that he does occasionally like to go with the three-man bare front. It was kind of like that thing was so bad this past year, they almost didn't want to mention that he will vary the thing and go with some three-man looks. Now, if you're like, Nolan didn't blitz enough. No, I like to send it to our people. Let's see the Cowboys blitz a little bit more. That's not really what Dan Quinn has done in the past. In fact, I think some of the, I think it was similar. I think Mike Nolan, Ed, you're really good with these numbers, and you're always asking ESPN Stats and Info to look things up for you. What I saw is Mike Nolan was like 20% of the time brought the blitz. This guy, that Dan Quinn has been more around like 22%. So it's not like a heavy blitz. And he's not, I think the differentiation, Ed, in the whole Rod Marinelli scene, you're like, okay, what is this? How does this differ from Richard and Marinelli and all of this? I think Marinelli had more of the attacking style. You know, let's get in there. Let's get the Rushman and let's send them blitzing into those gaps. Whereas,
well, he's more stunting and that sort of thing, too. Yeah.
Yes, and I don't think this guy minds doing some twist and stunning, but he doesn't send people diving into the backfield. It's more of like a, hey, let's be gap sound and let's bring an extra man that they can't account for into the box, and that should help against the running game. Which, Ed, let's be upfront. That's one of the big reasons Mike Nolan and some of this staff, Tom Sula, and those guys are no longer around. This defense this past year was historically bad against the run.
Well, it's historically bad against everything because they give up, what, the most touchdowns and the most points in franchise history. They've been playing football for 60 years, so defensive football is not a new concept to the Dallas Cowboys. In fact, Doomsday Podcast acknowledges the one-time greatness of the Dallas franchise on that side of the ball, but no more. But the run defense was horrific. In fact, if you look at the games against Cleveland, franchise record 307 yards rushing allowed against the Browns, and then nearly that same number against the Ravens until the final week of the season, those were the two highest figures of the entire league all year long. The 294 yards rushing by the Ravens and the 307 yards rushing by the Browns, both against the Cowboys, were the highest totals in the league until week 17, when the Ravens crushed somebody else with their unique approach to offensive football and the quarterback running power runs and so forth. But yeah, the run defense was a huge liability, but really they just weren't good anywhere. And you can't blitz if you can't trust your coverage in the back end, and they couldn't. The thing that strikes me is it was about this time last year, we were meeting with all the new assistants and there was all this buzz and excitement, you know, about Mike Nolan as a defensive coordinator, because he was going to bring some new concepts and they were going to use disguise and not be so predictable, and they were going to create more interceptions, none of which really happened. They didn't confuse anybody but themselves, it seemed, for the most part. And now everybody's embracing this. Oh, thank God we're, you know, going back to this scheme where it's very simple and everybody will know what we're playing. They'll know what we're playing, and we'll know what we're playing, but we're going to be so good at it that they won't be able to exploit that. It's just interesting how things change from one season to the next, just based on, you know, the experience of that previous year.
Isn't that what Greg Williams was saying to Jamal Adams, who you were talking about earlier, when he went over to Seattle? Was just like, well, good luck to you. I mean, they're not going to get to do anything anymore or disguise right. anything. And sometimes a safety is good enough to flourish in any system. And I believe Jamal Adams is certainly that type of player. You know, Ed, and I want to hear more about your thoughts, you know, that time you spent around Dan Quinn a little more. But a point you made earlier that I wanted to delve into a little more, you know, this will come down to, you know, you can say great hire. Oh, Dan Quinn, great hire. But, you know, a guy's only as successful as his players. The Sark Steve Sarkisian looked like a genius last night, and he did seem like a good play caller. And they're excited about him at the University of Texas. Well, he's got brilliant. He's got Devontae Smith he's throwing out to. He's got Najee Harris. Then they got Robinson. I mean, it helps to have these elite players. And, Ed, I would say DeMarcus Lawrence, maybe Gregory, Donovan Wilson emerged at some points in the season. And Diggs seems to have some ability in this area. But this defense that Dan Quinn is taking over is not just like loaded with playmakers. The Legion of Boom defense was loaded with playmakers. And so how much success Dan Quinn has, I mean, we'll see. We'll see. He did have some success in Atlanta, you know, doing it with players that weren't like your front line. I mean, Ed, wasn't he already there when that fateful day when the poor Cowboys offensive lineman gave up 5 or 6 sacks when Tyron Smith was out of the lineup? I mean,
they gave up 6 sacks to Adrian Claiborne.
Yes.
I think it was 8 overall, right?
Yeah, but Adrian Claiborne did not do much there, but ends up getting another contract almost based on that one day that he had against the Dallas Cowboys, and that came with Dan Quinn as the head coach. So he didn't have – he had great offensive players. I don't think he had a lot of great defensive playmakers, and that's quite honestly what he'll inherit here is not a tremendous amount of playmakers on defense.
Yeah, I mean, and you mentioned it, you know, Seattle's personnel during the 2013-2014 seasons when they led the league in total defense and scoring defense and back-to-back years, the first team to do that since the Chicago Bears dynasty of the 80s. You know, they had Michael Bennett and Cliff Averill on the defensive line, Bobby Wagner, who's still playing, KJ Wright, who's still playing. Malcolm Smith was Super Bowl MVP. And then in the secondary, they had Earl Thomas, Cam Chancellor, Richard Sherman, and Brandon Browner. You know, they had big, physical, intimidating hitters and playmakers in the secondary. And the secondary, to me, is the biggest area of concern on the current defense. I think Alden Smith can play the Leo position. I think Randy Gregory can play the Leo position. I think DeMarcus Lawrence will flourish in this situation. But, you know, you mentioned a few minutes ago, the running game, the run defense. And one of the people I talked to as an opposing head coach who played the Cowboys and had great success running the football against them, that's what they said to me. They got to get defensive tackles. They need a couple guys in the middle of that defense to force plays outside because they were so vulnerable with power rushes straight up the gut. And then the question you have to ask is, well, what about Jalen Smith? What about Leighton Vander Esch? Vander Esch is a great athlete, but he has not proven to be a dependable athlete. He suffered far too many injuries the last 2 years. He's never gotten back to where he was as a rookie in 2017. And so I think there's a lot of questions on the defensive side of the ball. And I guess the question about, you know, Dan Quinn would be how come they never had a dominant defense in Atlanta when he was the head coach there, given that, you know, right away they did commit their most valuable picks 3 years in a row to defense. They drafted, you know, Tack McKinley, the pass rusher, and Keanu, as I mentioned, and who's the other? Vic Beasley. So they devoted their first three number one picks in Dan Quinn's first 3 years there to defensive personnel, and really they were always ranked for the most part in the 20s. And yeah, he went to a Super Bowl, and I think he did a good job running an entire team. But also you have to weigh into the fact that they lost the Super Bowl to Tom Brady after leading 28-3. And Dan was calling the defense on that side of the ball against Brady on that comeback. And they went to the Super Bowl largely because their offense was so dominant, you know, with Julio Jones and Matt Ryan. I mean, and they had Kyle Shanahan calling the plays. And we all have seen now how valuable Kyle Shanahan is as an offensive play caller. So if you question the hire, I think it would be based in that. But I think Dan Quinn is, I think among the people available, Dan Quinn and Gus Bradley were by far the two best. And I'll also tell you that Wade Phillips was interested in the job. Wade Phillips was interested in getting back into the NFL as defensive coordinator. You know, he'd be interested in talking about it with anybody. He would have been willing to consider coming back to the Cowboys, even though he was exiled for Jason Garrett in the middle of the season. The only head coach Jerry Jones fired in the middle of the season was Wade Phillips. And despite all that, you know, Wade would have been willing to come back and felt like he had something to offer Jerry if he wanted to win some Lombardi trophies.
Yeah, I kind of advocated for that a little bit in that way that I do. And Wade is a big fan of our podcast and has been on this podcast a couple of times. And so that would have been a lot of fun. But Wade's had a great career. We'll see if he gets involved again in the NFL, but he did have interest. Ed, did you, when you were around Dan Quinn and in your experiences having covered him in the build up to Super Bowls and then as a head coach in that Super Bowl, I can kind of remember what it was like to spend a little time with him. Did you get a sense that he exuded similar confidence to Pete Carroll? You know, Pete Carroll is one of those kind of, it doesn't matter what age he is, and he's knocking on 70 if he isn't already 70, but he, you know, he's just one of those guys, infectious type personality. Is that the kind of guy Dan Quinn is? Is he a little more reserved? What were you able to glean from Dan Quinn when you spent some time around him, knowing that when you're getting ready for a Super Bowl, you might not, you know, it's not like he's going to be out there doing a bunch of rah-rah stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's a physically imposing guy. You know, he's a big man. You mentioned on Twitter he won the hammer throw or some such thing, some piece of trivia about Dan's athletic abilities. But he's a physically large man. I think he's a very engaging guy. He's easy to talk to. He has certainly has a humorous side to him. And I guess I would defer to, I mentioned Thomas Dimitroff, the Falcons general manager, and I asked him about Quinn, and he said Dan is the most authentic guy, really an authentic, cool guy. He can rip off that side coat jersey in a heartbeat, which I love because he's got a tough-ass side to him, he said. I appreciate the dichotomous part of his personality. It mixes really well with this generation of players. He said too many people come into this business with huge egos and they don't listen to people. Dan appropriately listens to people, whether it's Raheem Morris or another member of the coaching staff who's been here. He inspires that in other people, the players. They don't see him walking around with his chest out, unapproachable, know-it-all. He's a really cool, unique attribute that he has. It's honestly refreshing. He says when a coordinator crosses the threshold and becomes a head coach, the day after that they become the head coach, they know everything and everyone bows to them because they think he knows everything. He says that wasn't Dan. And that isn't Dan. So I think that's a pretty good description of the kind of person he's perceived to be by those who have worked closest with him. And, you know, I asked him at the Super Bowl about getting ready to play that game against Tom Brady as the Falcons head coach. And he said, you know, we have a saying, the only fight that matters is the one you're in. We can't do anything about our lack of experience in big games. What we can control is our attitude, our mindset, our preparedness to go play really hard and really well. If you put the work in, that's what you can count on. You can't BS yourself. You have to put the work in. So, and obviously he has. He's done a great job in many stops, and it's not easy to get to a Super Bowl. Yeah, they blew the biggest lead in Super Bowl history, 25 points to, you know, Tom Brady. But I guess if you're going to mention that in any kind of detail, you also ought to mention the high point of his career, which was beating Peyton Manning in the Super Bowl. I mean, Peyton Manning and that Broncos offense was coming off a historic regular season. And from the first snap on, they were beat. You know, the ball went over Peyton Manning's head in the shotgun on the first series, and he recovered for a safety, and the Seahawks just dominated that game on defense. Like, well, the final score is 43-8. I mean, the Broncos didn't come close to achieving you know, 20% of what their regular season output was per game against that great Seahawks defense. And an unknown Seahawks player, Malcolm Smith, as I mentioned, becomes a Super Bowl MVP. So that's how great that defense was, and that's how good Dan Quinn is capable of being when he's at his very best.
You know, Ed, I get the feeling, listening to it, hearing more about Dan and remembering back on all my time with Dan, which was basically a sitting at a table with him one time during a Super Bowl. I feel like he would make a good Doomsday podcast guest. So it's just occurred to me, we ought to get him on sometime. What do you think?
Yeah, I think someday soon after, you know, within a few months after his hiring, you know, the Cowboys will make him available to the media, and it would be nice to have him on as a guest. And I certainly think he'd be willing to do that for us, given the table time you've spent with him and the relationship that I've cultivated over these past years. But I just don't think right now is quite the time yet.
Okay. All right.
We'll have other people speak for him. And since I always try to use this as leverage when I'm trying to get somebody who's reluctant to speak to me to consent to doing so, I always say, look, I got to do the show. So if I can't have your opinion, we'll go with my opinion. I really don't think that's in your best interest, but that's what we're going to have to do. And sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't.
Oh, man. I think it's going to be a good working relationship that we have with Dan. I think he'll enjoy his time on Doomsday. And it's been good being back with you. Triple header action. You were back in a city that you've really enjoyed over the years. I would say that was a fun 3 days. I mean, all the games weren't great. There were a couple of pretty good games, but I do think that's a good way to do it. Triple header Saturday, triple header Sunday, and then national title game on Monday. That's for a football fan, that's nirvana.
Did you watch any of the Nickelodeon telecasts?
Yeah, I did. I was seeing a lot on Twitter, and I went over there and watched some of the slime and got a kick out of some of that. I think that was Ian Eagle's son involved in that thing, and Nate Burleson, and then a young lady who did a real nice job. And I, you know, Meredith and I were watching it, and some of the graphics kind of amused me. You know, some of the where we had to turn it off Nickelodeon. Well, it's kind of funny. Ed, you remember the point in the game? Might have been late in the first half. There was somebody got like kicked out of the game for throwing a punch.
Yeah.
That was number 17. Who was that?
One of the wide receivers for the Bears got tossed again.
Yeah. Anthony Miller.
There have been eight wide receiver ejections in recent years, and four of them have been Bears receivers.
Here's where we had to get off of Nickelodeon and go back, because Nickelodeon was not showing any of it. They said, oh, looks like there's some kind of scuffle down there. And so I got back over to where I needed to be, to Nance and Romo, just in time to see them showing the shot to the head. They did not show that on Nickelodeon. They didn't feel like the kids needed to see that. Miller taking the punch and apparently that defensive player for the Saints, who's kind of a nickel corner type, is known for being an agitator and luring others into fights like that and everything. So he did a good job and got that Bears. Sadly, the Bears offense is such that if you drop a touchdown, Ed, you're not getting it back. There are other offenses in the league that, like, if the Chiefs drop a touchdown, you're like, they'll get it back. If the Bears drop a touchdown, it's like, they're never getting close again.
They might get it back next month.
All right. Hey, good stuff. The emergency podcast. Ed, anything else? Anything else? You emptied the notebook on Dan Quinn. Anything else you need to say before we say goodnight?
No, I just think it's going to be an interesting offseason from the standpoint, as we've talked about, to see how things evolve with the Dak Prescott negotiations and where that number winds up being relative to the new salary cap number, which everybody thinks is going to be and the owners expect it to be lower instead of, you know, every year it's gone up at least $10 million, and now it's going to be potentially substantially lower, and how that affects what the Cowboys' comfort level is in signing Dak Prescott and avoiding having him be playing on the franchise tag for almost $38 million this year, and how that affects their ability to go out and get quality defensive players. And You know, we know they'll say that we're going to be dedicated this draft to getting defense, and that's what they need to do. And they need to do a way better job in personnel this in free agency this year, because their free agency performance on the defensive side of the ball was abysmal last year. And then, of course, they could not overcome the temptation when they saw CeeDee Lamb sitting there at 17, despite wanting to rebuild their defense a year ago to accommodate the fired Mike Nolan. They went ahead and gave in to the temptation and drafted CeeDee Lamb at 17, and he justified all of that with his performance, and he's going to be a great player. But they're going to have to – if they're going to be good on defense, and they need to be better on way better on defense if they're going to compete. I mean, they are so far from being the Packers or the Saints or the Rams or, you know, some of these – the Seahawks, some of these other teams – and that's where the margin to me is the greatest. I think they'll be good on offense, but the defense, really, they need a commitment from the personnel side, both through the draft and free agency. It'll be interesting to see what influence Dan Quinn has in that regard and what kind of players they're able to get for him.
Well, Ed, when they put Alabama's Patrick Surtain next to Trayvon Diggs, it's going to be great. It's going to be Legion of Boom 2. Dallas style. All right, it is the Doomsday Podcast from Frito Nation Productions, and Chris Gross doing a great job as our man of production for Ed Werder. Hope everybody has a great week and a fun divisional round playoff weekend. It is the Doomsday Podcast. Good night, everybody.
Hey, it's Mark Goodman.
And I'm Alan Light.
On today's podcast, Record Store Day founder Carrie Colleton is joining us to discuss the April 20th RSD special releases.
Plus, we'll talk live with our audience, the Sound Up Pod Squad, and find out who still listens to vinyl. And some updates from the Beatles universe.
Oh, good. Sound Up with Mark Goodman and Alan Light, the only music podcast that matters. Get it on Pandora, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.